From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting the U.S. and Russia have agreed to hold a summit between Presidents Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. The announcement came following talks Wednesday in Moscow between Russian officials, including Mr. Putin, and White House National Security Advisor John Bolton. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke of the importance of bilateral ties in remarks to U.S. lawmakers in Washington.
The president is looking forward to an opportunity to find those handful of places where we can have productive conversations that lead to improvements for each of our two countries. I think we're eyes wide open that field space is pretty small. They don't share our values in the same way that the European countries do. But I think the president is hopeful that we can reduce the temperature, reduce the risk for America, and find a handful of places where we can perhaps get a good outcome in Ukraine.
The summit expected to take place in a mutual agreeable third country. An announcement could come Thursday. Aside from Ukraine, the agenda will likely involve Syria. Atlantic Council security analyst Robert Manning also believes a meeting is important regarding arms control.
I think we have real problems in terms of the unraveling of our strategic framework with Russia that we've had since the Cold War, and that's something that needs to be seriously examined and fixed.
Mr. Putin said U.S.-Russia relations are not in the best shape, but added the Bolton meeting offers hope the first steps can be taken to restore full-scale ties. The sentencing of a protest leader in Morocco's Rif region to 20 years in prison sparked outrage Wednesday. Hundreds protested against the conviction of Nasser Zefzafi by a Casablanca court on charges of undermining public order and threatening national unity. This is VOA News. In the U.S., 82-year-old Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy Wednesday announced his intention to step down from the 9-member court after 30 years. It'll give President Donald Trump another nomination to the High Court, his first coming last year with the appointment of Neil Gorsuch. The Kennedy announcement will likely upend the delicate balance between liberals and conservatives on the High Court that often has the final say on major issues. Sam Ehrman, a University of Southern California law professor, said Kennedy has been viewed as a crucial swing vote.
He was a conservative who was moderate or even liberal on certain issues. So on those issues, you can expect there to be a fairly substantial shift. Abortion rights is one, affirmative action is another. In other areas, though, it may not change things dramatically, and you will also now have one of the five conservatives emerge as the most moderate, and that person will have different issues where they depart from the conservative orthodoxy.
Kennedy's retirement is expected to lead to a major confirmation battle in the Senate where the nomination must be approved. Poland Wednesday revised its 4-month-old so-called Holocaust law that was criticized by the U.S. and Israel by removing the threat of a 3-year jail term for anyone convicted of accusing Poland of being in any way complicit to Nazi war crimes against Jews in occupied Poland during World War II. Ephraim Zuroff directs the Simon Wiesenthal Center.
There's no question that a law like this, in its original form, poses a very serious threat to serious historical research on the role of Poles during the Holocaust. If they reach the conclusion, which happens to be true, or not happens to be, but is true, that Poles collaborated with the Nazis in the murder of Jews during the Holocaust.
The Polish government has argued the law was necessary to protect Poland's reputation of being a victim of Nazi aggression. The first Rwandan-made Volkswagen rolled off the assembly line Wednesday at the country's first auto factory. Thomas Schaefer heads the Volkswagen Group South Africa.
The big game will be to connect the African brothers, Kenya, Rwanda, Nigeria, South Africa, and create an African market. Because then you're talking 1 billion people. And then you can walk away from exporting to America, exporting to Germany. What's the point? You've got the market right here.
President Paul Kagame was on hand and said the $20 million plant represents a new chapter in Rwanda's economic transformation. After talks in Beijing with visiting Defense Chief Jim Mattis, China's President Xi Jinping insists China does not intend to lose even 1 inch of territory, believed to be a reference to China's assertion over contested islands in the South China Sea.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, June the 28th. And here are some of the stories we're covering for you. A United Nations probe into the human rights situation in Burundi finds government opponents are subject to mass violations, including summary executions, disappearances, arbitrary arrests, and torture. And Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa says that the attempt on his life at a political rally last weekend was the work of a faction within his party. And in Nairobi, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta formally sent off the 100 Cuban doctors to deliver health services to Kenya's 47 counties. That's despite of the protests by the union representing Kenyan medical practitioners, who say that the decision to hire Cuban doctors is unethical because there are enough Kenyan doctors, many without jobs.
Local specialists are few and far between, yet their services are in high demand across the country.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta. And in Gambia's two big cities of Banjul and Serekunda, bread bakers shut down their bakeries in protest of the government's refusal to allow them to increase the price of bread.
This is a surprise to everybody. It never happens before that you wake up in the morning and then expecting to have a loaf of bread for your breakfast, which I would say 90% of these, you know, Gambians, that's what they're used to.
That is Abdoulaye Sane. He's a former member of parliament for Banjul Central. Stay tuned. Those stories plus a World Cup update are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. A United Nations probe into the human rights situation in Burundi finds government opponents are subject to mass violations, including executions, disappearances, arbitrary arrests, and torture. President Pierre Nkurunziza's recent declaration that he will support the future president of the republic when his mandate ends in 2020 has been welcomed by several countries, but in its latest report, the UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi casts doubt on the credibility of Nkurunziza's declaration, noting that it lacks a clear and firm commitment by the sitting leader not to run for president in the upcoming elections. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa says that the apparent attempt on his life at a political rally last week was a work of a faction in his party. That faction is led by former First Lady Grace Mugabe. Saturday's attack killed two people and injured 49 others. Mrs. Mugabe is currently in Singapore with her husband, former President Robert Mugabe, where he's being hospitalized. Studio 7's reporter Blessing Zulu tells me that Mrs. Mugabe has yet to officially respond to this accusation, but that it comes as no surprise that elements sympathetic to longtime leader Robert Mugabe would be behind this assassination attempt.
People, I don't think, were actually surprised because after toppling Mugabe on November 15 last year, there were elements of the Central Intelligence Organization that were sympathetic to former President Robert Mugabe, and also the police who were disgruntled somewhere. Were fired once Mnangagwa took over. So there are many elements out there who are out to get him. So that something like this will happen, I think many expected it. And even he himself hinted even some few weeks ago that there was even a plot to say even if he wins the election, he will be impeached in parliament.
Now, this is a pretty strong accusation, obviously, without naming names. As soon as he said it, everybody started pointing fingers to the former First Lady Grace Mugabe, who has had a long-standing beef with President Mnangagwa. Has she reacted? Has she had anything to say about the situation since it happened on Saturday?
Yes. On Saturday. No, she has not responded. As you are aware, the former First Lady is in Singapore, where his husband, we understand, is in hospital. He's not feeling well. So she has not responded. But she just posted some pictures with their children in Singapore that, you know, she was showing a V sign, like a victory sign, yeah, or peace sign, or peace sign, whatever.
On our social media platforms?
Yes, which was then used in the state-controlled Herald newspaper to say, why is she posting this 3 days, after this blast?
Okay.
But we did talk to President Robert Mugabe's nephew and former youth minister and also former labor minister, Patrick Joao, who is in exile. Many suspect that is in Nairobi, Kenya. But he told VOA that the so-called Generation 40 or G40 that is linked to the former First Lady was not involved in this blast. And he was actually condemning it and saying that the person who introduced violence to Zimbabwe is actually President Emmerson Mnangagwa by the coup of November 15.
Usually when such situations happen, when either there's a failed coup d'etat or a failed assassination attempt, what we often see is that there are sweeps, security sweeps in the city, in the towns. Have you seen any type of security sweeps taking place in Zimbabwe?
Only today, where the president was expected to address a rally in a province called Matabele North, Wange to be precise, there was a heavy army and police presence. They even had those sniffer dogs around, but unfortunately, for whatever reason, the president did not attend that rally. They said he had a prior engagement, but many are saying that maybe it was because of a low turnout or because he thought that his security was not guaranteed and the stage was not near his supporters as he usually does. It was quite a distance to show that all is not well. They are not very comfortable with his security. But the day after the blast on Sunday, the vice president, General Constantino Chiwenga, had a rally in Chitungwiza, just 25 kilometers south of Harare. Journalists who went there said that it was not tight enough, and many people were actually surprised to say, after something like this has occurred, why are you not, tightening the security?
Right. That was Blessing Zulu, a reporter with Studio 7 here at the Voice of America. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta on Wednesday formally sent off the 100 Cuban doctors to deliver health services to Kenya's 47 counties. President Kenyatta said the partnership between Kenya and Cuba is aimed at ensuring that Kenya achieves a universal health care for its people. But the union representing Kenya's medical practitioners, pharmacists and dentists says that the decision to hire Cuban doctors is unethical because there are enough Kenyan doctors, many without jobs. For more on this, Maureen Ojambo reports from Nairobi.
After the arrival to Kenya a few weeks ago, now the Cuban doctors have been dispatched to their respective stations as each county receives two specialists. The doctors have been on a three-week induction program and now set to take up the task. Speaking during the send-off program of the Cuban doctors held in Nairobi, President Uhuru Kenyatta says the Ministry of Health has invested heavily in the health systems to ensure affordability for all Kenyans. Kenyatta says lack of enough specialists in the country led to signing of the Cuban doctors to save Kenyans.
Through the Ministry of Health, investments are being injected into our health systems towards more affordable and available health service delivery. Local specialists are few and far between, yet their services are in high demand across the country.
Kenyatta says Kenya is ready to work together with the Cuban doctors across the country, promising to improve the relationship between Kenya and Cuba. On his part, the Cuban ambassador to Kenya, Gomez Diaz, has said that the partnership is aimed at building great relationship between Kenya and Cuba.
Together, we are making history in our bilateral relation. Mr. President, thanks to the determination of your government and the generosity of the Kenyan people, our doctors are already here in this beautiful country, ready to learn from you and humbly transfer our experience. At present, Cuban doctors work in 65 countries all over the world.
However, the Health Cabinet Secretary Cecil Kariuki says that In the recent past, the Ministry of Health has made tremendous steps to ensure mortality rates in hospitals decreases.
Kenya has made significant progress in terms of health outcomes and also health initiatives. One, on maternal mortality, we have seen a reduction of 488 per 1,000 live births from the year 2009 to 216 per 100,000 live births. On infant mortality, this one has reduced from 52 per 1,000 live births recorded in the same period to 36.5 deaths.
This comes barely a few days after Nairobi court dismissed a case filed to block the deployment of Cuban doctors to hospitals around the country. According to one of the doctors in Kenya, he claims there are many specialists in Kenya who are jobless and the government has not considered them yet. He says importing doctors to come and do what Kenyan specialists can do is a waste of resources.
The doctors in Kenya are few, that is obvious. But as much as there are few, there are many doctors, more than the Cubans who have come, who have not been employed. Every year, more than 200 specialists qualify from Kenyan universities, but not all of them have been deployed. Even when they are deployed, they are not being paid this kind of money that is like 4 to 5 times what people are paid here. They have only brought 100. But the ones who are here who have not been employed are more than 100 specialists. And our specialists are not like the Cubans. The job, the kind of job they do in Cuba is what even our, besides sitting in hospitals and following up basic things, they cannot do what our senior medical officers do here. I think that is such a waste of resources.
The governors who have been tasked to ensure that the universal health is achieved in every county have promised to work closely with doctors to ensure universal health care, which is among President Uhuru Kenyatta's Big Four agenda, is attained. The 100 doctors are set to work for 2 years only as Kenya sends 50 doctors to Cuba for specialist training. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
And from Nairobi, we go to Kampala, where the Ugandan government says it already has thousands of barrels of crude oil even before its official oil production phase expected by 2021. A senior government official says that the oil estimated to be worth millions of dollars was availed during the testing phase. From Kampala, Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report.
Ofwono Opondo, Uganda government spokesperson, says the available oil is not yet for commercial purposes.
Obviously, there's oil which has been extracted for purposes of different purposes. Testing the quality, for example. When you test the quality, then you determine the commercial viability. How much of that oil can you turn into kerosene? How much of that oil can you turn into aviation fuel? How much of that oil can you turn into diesel? How much of that oil can you turn into petrol? How much of it will you have clean oil and then biofuels for the byproducts?
Uganda discovered 6.5 billion barrels worth of crude oil deposits 12 years ago in the Albertine Rift Basin near its border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. Opondo says plans are underway to start oil refining and eventual export.
The plan is to start with 30,000 barrels per day and upgrade it to 60,000. And the government position is our first oil we pump from underground will go to the refinery, the 30,000 barrel refinery a day. It is the extra after the 30,000 that will be pumped through the oil pipeline as a raw material, as in raw form, for export.
According to the World Bank forecast, commercial oil production at its peak could fetch Uganda more than 7 trillion Uganda shillings or some $2 billion annually in revenues. Opondo says the government has approved a law requiring all those operating oil and gas industry to employ the majority of Ugandans.
The consortium of companies that have taken oil contracts are going to be required to train Ugandans in short, medium term, and long term skills, so that by 2020-2021, there is no company, foreign or local,
that should make an excuse why they still want to bring a truck driver, why they still want to bring an oil attendant, a meter reader at the refinery.
Earlier this year, the Chicago Bridge and Iron Inc., an American engineering, procurement and construction company that specializes in projects for oil and gas companies, passed about a dozen local laborers to work in the oil industry. Oil Consortium China, National Offshore Oil Corporation, or CNOOC, and Total, the operators of Uganda's oil fields, have said production will commence in 2021. The World Bank says oil production could propel Uganda into a middle-income status by 2040. The World Bank, however, warns the government must set up right institutions, fight corruption, enhance transparency and accountability, and above all, the World Bank warns the government must diversify the economy and avoid relying on oil revenues. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thank you, Mugume. You're listening to Daybreak on the Voice of America. In the Gambia, bread bakers shut down their bakeries in protest of the government's refusal to allow them to increase the price of bread. Social Security workers also marched to the president's office on Tuesday, calling for the sacking of their boss. Reporter Panderimbai has more on these stories.
There is massive bread shortage in the Gambia. Consumers woke up on Wednesday morning, only to be told that the bakers are on sit-down strike. This followed a price dispute between the local bakers and the Ministry of Trade. Trade Minister Aisha Touré has in the recent past engaged the bakers, asking them to consider reducing the price of bread. She told them that the new government has inherited a virtually bankrupt economy. Hence, she said the bakers should consider not increasing prices. Ami Bojan Sisoho is the director of press at the president's office.
On the issue of bread, if you recall, the minister responsible for these issues is the Minister of Trade. And I guess those who were following the news yesterday had their press release on the television. So this is so far where we are. The issue has not reached a stage where it will come to the office of the president. The relevant ministry is handling it at this point in time.
Bakers have cited what they call the high cost of flour in the market. They said they cannot sell their bread on losses. Ablai Sen is the former APRC Member of Parliament for Banjul Central.
This is a surprise to everybody. It never happens before that you wake up in the morning and then expecting to have a loaf of bread for your breakfast, which I would say 90% of these, you know, Gambians, that's what they're used to. And to my surprise, I heard that they're on strike, that they have increased the price because it was reduced during the course of the Ramadan to $6, and they put it back to $7.
Besides rice, which is Gambia's main staple food, bread is the most consumed food in the country. Sen explains to VOA to what extent has the bread shortage affected Gambians.
I would say that it affects every Banjulian, because in Banjul here, if not everybody, I would say 95 or 97% of Banjulians bread for their breakfast, and even at night for their dinner, especially in late hour movers too, it's bread that they would take before going to bed. So it's a problem. It's really a problem.
Market women vendors who relied on bread to cater for the needs of their customers have also been hardly hit by the bread shortage. The average Gambian lives below $1 per day. With the price for bag of rice on the increase, Sen says the government should intervene before more people will suffer.
Imagine the average Gambians, average civil servant, how much are they being paid? If they buy one bag of rice out of their salary, the cash flow is waiting. Some of them house rent is waiting. And other things, not talking about school fees and other things.
In another development, staffers of the Gambia Social Security Housing and Finance Corporation on Tuesday organized a peaceful protest. The protesting workers marched into the state house in Banjul, where they called for the sacking of their boss, Mohamed Manjang. Mr. Manjang has been accused of alleged corruption, abuse of office, and nepotism, a charge Manjang vehemently denied. Both the state house and the Inspector General of Police have called on Gambians to secure a police permit before organizing a protest march. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Panderimbai reporting.
And with that, we'll turn to Samson O'Malley for some World Cup news. Good morning, Samson.
Good Thursday morning to you, Jackson. It's day 15th of the 2018 FIFA World Cup taking place in Russia. Reactions have continued to come in since the exit of the Super Eagles. Defender Leon Balogun and Chidozie Awuzie told VOA Daybreak Sports that the Super Eagles are still shocked following their loss to Argentina.
Said, I'm still angry how we gave that chance away yesterday. I watched the second goal over and over again, and I think we could have avoided it quite easily. Maybe we were too tired at the end of the match, but I'm sad. I don't know if I have the opportunity to play another World Cup. I hope I do.
Yeah, everyone was so sad, everyone, because that was not the result we wanted. We wanted to win and to make Nigeria proud. That was what that was our aim. To win and to qualify to the next round, but the result we got, that was not what we expected, and we were so sad. But yeah.
On Wednesday, Sweden and Mexico booked their spot in the round of 16 after a dramatic afternoon of Group F action. The Swedish side defeated Mexico 3-0 at the Ekaterinburg Arena on Wednesday, as both qualified following Germany's 2-0 loss to South Korea. Peter Schmeichel said that Germany deserved nothing from their game versus South Korea.
They didn't have the ball that much. Deserved. They had the chances in the game. And of course, as Germany got more and more desperate to get a goal, they opened up, and the second goal was scored while Manuel Neuer was up the other end. But yeah, Germany did not deserve anything. The way they have played this tournament has been very bad. The way their preparation games have been, you know, you think, okay, that's just in preparation, but they carry that really poor form into the tournament.
Meanwhile, South Korea's players were unaware that they had been eliminated from the World Cup when the final whistle went after their remarkable 2-0 win over Germany, which also sent the champions crashing out of the tournament. The Asian side needed to beat Germany by more than 2 goals to stand a chance of qualifying from Group F as runners-up and hope Mexico beat Sweden. But their already slim hopes ended when the Scandinavians raced to a 3-0 lead in the second half. So, final group matches are expected to take place today, with Egypt, Morocco, Tunisia and Nigeria already out. Senegal will be hoping to keep their qualification for the knockout stage and that of Africa alive when they meet Colombia in their last group match later today. The other Group H match will see Japan taking on Poland. In Group G, England and Belgium will meet each other, even though they are assured of their place in the last 16. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in St. Petersburg, Russia. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good day. And that's it for this Thursday, June the 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Rikish Ryok, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotin, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.